Überleitung zu unserem nächsten Redner Leon Tickli ist, ist, dass es auch unklar ist, was eigentlich gelehrt werden muss. Die Qualität der Bildung ist wichtig und es ist eigentlich auch wichtig, was wird denn eigentlich unterrichtet. Unser nächster Speaker, unser nächster Sprecher, Leon Tickli, ist Professor an der Universität Bristol. Er ist auch Direktor des Zentrums für vergleichende und internationale Bildungsforschung. In seiner Studie, in seinen Forschungen befasst er sich vor allem mit dem Thema Bildung in ärmeren Ländern und hat einen Fokus auf Subsahara-Afrika. Und im Moment arbeitet er an sprachunterstützten Lehrbüchern und Pädagogik in Ruanda. Herr Tickli wird auf die Frage nochmal eingehen, der Qualität. Welche Bildung brauchen wir? Welche Qualität muss sie haben? Und besonders interessant ist, welche Qualität braucht die Bildung der heutigen Zeit, des Anthropozäns, wie es heißt. Und das Anthropozän, viele von Ihnen werden es wissen, ist das Zeitalter, in dem wir heute leben, in dem der Mensch eine unglaubliche Einwirkung auf die Umwelt hat, auf die biologischen, auf die geologischen Prozesse. Das heißt, welche Fähigkeiten müssen die Kinder mitbekommen, um steigende Ungleichheit zu verhindern und der Klimakrise entgegenzuwirken? Mr. Tickli, you can take off the headphones now. The floor is yours.
Okay, thank you very much. It's a great pleasure and privilege to be here. And I'd like to first of all start by thanking the city of Vienna and Sudvind for the kind invitation to present some of my ideas to you today in this very important conference. And I'd like to also acknowledge, Bilal, your contribution there in outlining the nature of the crisis that we're facing today on a global scale. And I'd like to try and complement that, if I can, by, if you like, trying to go behind the statistics that you've presented and present some kind of understanding about what education for sustainable development might mean, how we can begin to think about the causes of unsustainable development in the world, and then begin to think about what education for sustainable development might mean. And I'd like to just start off by saying a little bit about myself, in that, you know, lots of these issues came into my consciousness as a young man growing up, training as a science teacher and going to teach in Africa. And I was teaching refugees from South Africa at that time in Tanzania during the dark days of apartheid. And it really kind of alerted me to a couple of things. The first thing that it alerted me to, of course, was the dreadful impact that colonialism, apartheid, had on education systems in sub-Saharan Africa, where I've done much of my work. As a science teacher, many of the children that I taught had no exposure to mathematics or science education whatsoever. The second thing that it drew to my attention was the utter irrelevance of much of what was being taught for these children, for their needs and for their backgrounds. They were being taught an essentially Eurocentric curriculum that had very limited significance for the kinds of sustainability challenges that the continent is facing. As a teacher of science, I was struck on the one hand by the incredibly important role that Western science can play, but also of the absences, the omissions, the lack of attention to indigenous knowledge and other kinds of ways of knowing the natural world that are so important for dealing with Africa's challenges today. Lots of the ideas that I'm going to talk about, this is a little bit of commercialism on my part, are in a book that's hopefully coming out in the next couple of weeks. So if you want more background information, you can get it from there. But of course, when we talk about the current situation, we're talking about issues of poverty, inequality, kinds of challenges that Bilal was indicating in education that are reflected in other areas of social development as well. But of course, in many respects, it's increasingly, global agendas are increasingly overshadowed by the climate crisis. And that is exacerbated in countries like Africa by extreme poverty. The two are inseparable. We're living in the Anthropocene, an era where human-made problems, human-made decisions, human-made processes are having a profound effect on the planet. That's what's definitive about the world that we live in today. And these problems are felt most starkly by the poor. It's in countries of Africa, of South Asia, of other parts of the low-income world that people are really experiencing, really at the sharp end of the climate crisis, whether it's flooding, whether it's processes of desertification, deforestation, whether it's rapid processes of urbanization and the kind of challenges, sustainable development that those pose, whether it's issues to do with water or health, sanitation. All of these issues are felt most acutely in the low-income world. So issues of climate change, of the collapse of the biosphere, intersect with issues of poverty, with issues of class, with issues of gender, to create the climate crisis that's experienced in the world today. Okay, I want to just draw your attention to a particular model of thinking about sustainable development that I think is quite useful for framing the way that we're thinking. I think increasingly, you know, well, historically, particularly in the West, we've been obsessed with this idea of economic growth. And you still hear it in lots of development discourse that actually the purpose of development is economic growth. And then from economic growth, all other good things trickle down eventually to alleviate poverty and so on. But of course, this takes no account whatsoever of planetary boundaries. This model is taken from the work of Kate Raworth, who's an economist at the University of Oxford. And she talks about this sweet spot, this model of donut economics, which is the area in which governments, rather than being obsessed with economic growth, need to think about. It means balancing the demands on natural resources on the one hand, recognizing planetary boundaries, but also understanding that the point of economic development is not just growth and more growth and more growth and more growth, but it's actually about meeting the needs of human populations. And here she's defined it in terms of the sustainable development goals. So these are the sustainable development goals. And the great thing about coming after Bilal is that I don't really need to talk much about SDG 4, which of course is the education SDG. And Bilal's already explained that it has a focus on lifelong learning, which is extremely welcome. And it counteracts the very reductionist focus of the MDGs on primary education, which, while important, isn't the whole picture, because I wish to argue we really need to think about systemic responses to the education, the learning crisis. So a recent summary of UN documents has shows the importance of education in relation to the other SDGs. I won't go into it much here, but it's quite clear, just from a simple glance at this rather complicated spaghetti-like diagram, that education is deeply implicated in all other areas of sustainable development, in quite complex ways, though, and involving positive and negative feedback loops. It is, on the one hand, for example, can contribute to processes of economic development. But then education, as we've seen, is also susceptible to periods of economic crisis and downturn, as we've seen in the enrollment figures that Bilal showed us earlier. Okay, so the learning crisis, again, Bilal has identified, you know, key dimensions of that in terms of the statistics, that the number of children that don't learn even basic mathematics and numeracy at primary school, but also the extent to which people don't progress or have access to good vocational skills, which can help to alleviate poverty in rural areas and in urban areas. But also the crisis in higher education, that very few children make it, very few learners make it to higher education. The learning crisis is also defined not just by these numbers, but by things like the irrelevance of the curriculum for many, many learners, that it doesn't relate to the kinds of needs that they face, that they're based on often outdated colonial models of the curriculum, very content-driven, top-down, and also very teacher-centered, rely on rote learning in many cases. The learning crisis is also demonstrated by huge inequalities, again, that Bilal indicated, not just in terms of class, but in terms of gender as well, and in many countries in terms of ethnicity. Language is something that's often omitted when we talk about the learning crisis, but it's a huge issue. It's a huge issue that affects our learners around the world, that they aren't able to learn in their mother tongue, particularly in the early years, and that this is critical for cognitive and affective learning, as linguists will tell us. So the learning crisis is multifaceted, and it needs to be understood as such. I'm going to skip a lot of these slides because I'm limited by time, and I want to give you what I hope are the main messages that I can in the time that's available. But you have these slides, and I hope that you can read some of the others that I'm skipping at your leisure. So how do we go about solving the learning crisis? Well, one of the ways is to begin to think about conceptualizing what we mean by education for sustainable development. What does it mean? And to begin with, we need to understand what we mean by sustainable development itself. And here I kind of take a lead from partly Kate Raworth's model, but also the work of other people like Amartya Sen, the Indian developmental economist, who talks about human capabilities, the opportunity freedoms that individuals, that groups have to lead the livelihoods that they have reason to value, that are often denied to many people because of poverty and other kinds of inequality and disadvantage. So sustainable development is sustainable development that allows people to, affords people the capabilities, the opportunity freedoms that they, but not only they, their children and subsequent generations have to lead the lives that they have to value. But sustainable development we can no longer conceive of in anthropocentric terms. We can no longer conceive of sustainable development just in terms of the human species. We have to think about other species, but also about natural systems, which in the context of the climate crisis is very immediate. And so sustainable development involves understanding the capabilities of those systems, of natural systems, to flourish. And from that, education for sustainable development is education that can afford, gives learners, regardless of class, gender, rurality, ethnicity, home language, the opportunity freedoms that they need to lead the lives that they value, and that also respects the environment and the planet. Okay, I'll come back to that one a bit later. So I think we need to think a little bit about, you know, education systems as they currently are. We need to think systemically. So I would say that, you know, from a historical analysis, looking back at the role of education in relation to development in sub-Saharan Africa, where I've done much of my work, education has not contributed to sustainable development. Quite the opposite. It's contributed to unsustainable development. In the economic sphere, many countries, many low-income countries, the reason they're poor goes back to the colonial experience, the fact that their economies have been based on extractive processes. Low-income countries in Africa and elsewhere have often been the source of raw materials for processes of manufacturing in the global north, processes of producing manufactured goods that are then sold back to the global south at a profit. That's been the basis of the economic relationship between the global south and the global north through the decades. And education has contributed to that. It's only a very few members of elites that have had any access to education whatsoever. For the most part, for the poor, particularly the rural poor, there hasn't been a need in purely instrumental economic terms to give them that education, because their role has been to provide cheap labor, essentially, for these processes of extractive production. So we can see that at an economic level, you know, education has contributed to these wider processes of economic inequality. But that has had environmental consequences too, because these extractive processes have had devastating consequences for the environment in Africa, whether it's pollution, whether it's the dependence on mining, which has had enormous implications for the environment. There's dependency on fossil fuels, fuel poverty, and of course, education often hasn't brought environmental concerns, haven't been at the fore in the curriculum. People haven't been educated to understand the environment. Of course, the great tragedy is that in indigenous knowledge systems, people, communities in Africa have been living in harmony with the environment for centuries. But that knowledge has been lost. That knowledge is not incorporated into the curriculum. I once visited the University of Rwanda, a senior professor there who'd been plowing away with very limited funds to try to develop indigenous fertilizers, drawing on indigenous knowledge, indigenous medicines, drawing on indigenous knowledge that actually work in Rwanda. But he got no funding to do that. But of course, you know, education has also contributed to undemocratic systems. It's often contributed through supporting the education of elites only to exclusion, processes of political exclusion. Learners haven't been educated as democratic citizens. They've often been more likely to be educated as subjects, subjects of different forms of authoritarian rule. And that's been reflected in the curriculum, but also in the very profoundly undemocratic nature of many schools, where learner voice, where teacher voice, where parent voice is not recognized or valued. But also, you know, civil society has had a contradictory relationship with education. On the one hand, the churches, for example, in Africa, and the private sector, as Bilal was explaining, have played a role in providing education. But this has often come at a cost, as Bilal explained, in terms of the coherence of the system. Education systems in Africa and elsewhere continue to be very fragmented, lacking coherence that you would expect that you need in an education system. But there's also the question of culture, and this is a burning one in the African continent. I've already mentioned the Eurocentric nature of the curriculum, but also that children are being forced to learn in a language that's not their own from a young age that puts them at a profound disadvantage. There are very few examples around the world. In fact, I can only think of one country where children have been expected to learn in a medium of instruction that is not their own, and where that country has subsequently developed. Every other country that has succeeded to develop in the global era, the children have learned in their own language, right through, but they've learned a second language, as you all have, through very good second language instruction. The language issue is a burning one, and it's depriving children in Africa and other parts of the low-income world the kind of academic, cognitive, and effective achievement. But also, you know, as I've mentioned, the exclusion of different kinds of knowledge. Okay, but violence as well. Education has been complicit. Education has actually been complicit in processes of conflict, of violence in the African continent. It's got a Janus face. You know, on the one hand, it can contribute to peace education. We know that through developing democratic citizenship, through advocating peace, and so on. But actually, education has often been used as a tool in conflict. For example, through limiting access to different ethnic or minority groups to education, by actually explicitly being used to foster different kinds of political ideology that feed into conflict. And of course, when we think about violence, it's not just state-led violence that we need to think about. Violence also operates at an individual level. Girls, women, are often subject to sexualized violence on a daily basis, every day, in schools in Africa, as elsewhere in the world, not just in Africa. So schools are complicit in reproducing violence. So this has implications for what we understand by education for sustainable development. These are the dimensions that I think education needs to address. Education needs to address if it is going to serve the interests of sustainable development. That it needs to contribute to just and sustainable economies. Sure, through promoting basic skills like literacy and numeracy, but also through providing access for all learners, to learners in rural areas and to disadvantaged areas to vocational skills that can contribute to alleviating unemployment, but also access to higher education, but also transforming education systems as well, so that they are geared towards meeting the economic challenges and needs of the continent. But also environmental protection. There's a great need for schools to promote environmental protection. That has cultural aspects as well. As a science teacher, as a teacher of science, I became... What does that mean? 5 minutes? 2 minutes? 3 minutes. Okay, thanks. Okay. It means being able to incorporate indigenous knowledge, ways of understanding the natural world, into mainstream curricula, but also the role of democratic citizenship in that, the importance of encouraging, you know, engaging civil society, but in a coherent way in education, governance, and finance, but also in recognizing cultural diversity and addressing the language question, the burning language question in Africa, and understanding the Janus face of education in relation to peace and conflict, understanding the positive role that education systems can play in building peace. But of course, education can't do it on its own, and this is critical. Sometimes if you read World Bank reports and other kinds of reports, you'd think that education on its own was a panacea for all of the difficulties of unsustainable development. It's not. It can only be a weapon for sustainable, it can only be used for sustainable development if it's part of a broader process, if it's joined up with broader processes of sustainable development across the economy and society that respects also the environment in the Anthropocene. Thank you very much.
Vielen Dank, Mr. Tickley.